it's a behavioral method where we use the power and influence and personality and charisma of people to try and get people excited, rather than the personal choice, where which we talk a lot about, that you find a way to connect people from their own intrinsic motivation to a motive that they help choose, like something either for a stakeholder or particularly a customer. Now, that has staying power if they are also doing the work to help that be achieved.
Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. But first, we have a request. As always, we are looking for your articles in business journals, journals on business, or organizational conduct and design. Sorry, no government or politics. We don't do issues here. What we need is a published article to respond to, and so that others can read and also examine the opinion of the authors in the article. Offering only a subject does not work. We don't give a first opinion. We only give second opinions around here. Then we can use our living systems frameworks with a critical eye and offer a regenerative and developmental alternative. Please send your articles to carol@carolsanford.com. As we take your request seriously, and if we feel like we have something new to offer as a second opinion that's not been covered somewhere else extensively, or maybe we haven't covered it hopefully extensively, we'll take it on. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion, as you know by now, and usually a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn how to work more closely with us or how to join a multi-organization business team or change agent community, stay tuned to the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout. And with me, as always, is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hey, Zach.
So our topic today is missions for teams, which also includes the idea of mission statements, which we've done a little bit before, but I feel like we have a little bit of a different take on it today. And I also want to thank Karen Olson Ramanujan. Is that pronounced her name, Carol?
It's Karen.
Karen Olson Ramanujan. Okay.
Got it.
She's a change agent development community member who suggests this article. And so this article is from the Cabrera Research Lab blog and is entitled "Why Do I Need a Mission?" by Derek and Laura Cabrera from August 26th of 2020. But Carol, what were you seeing that had you wanting us to take this on besides just having a listener send this in?
Well, you know, we do love articles that come from our listeners. And this one caught my attention because Karen specifically said, I'd love to have a contrarian view on this. The other thing is she works with entrepreneurs. She has a business called Regenpreneurs. And so I felt like if her members could benefit from it, we should do something plus demand of ourselves that we get beyond what I see are the shallow explanations of this in journals, and even force us to deepen our own thinking about this kind of popularized topic. So I felt like it would be good for us also. The other thing I think got me excited was when you responded and said, well, that first paragraph really intrigued me. And I think we ought to start out with that. So what were you thinking about that first paragraph that made you want to do the subject?
Yeah. So language and metaphor is not kind of something that we're all conscious of on a day-to-day basis, but it is one of the more slippery ways where we can kind of end up getting ourselves dragged in kind of old, unexamined ideas, basically, that lead us astray. And so one aspect of the work we do actually at Change Agent Development and our Change Agent community involves just that. It's reflecting on language and metaphors and that we use them unconsciously, but it's more about kind of reflecting on them, discerning them, and kind of trying to discern the effects of using them. So a while ago, Elon Musk talked about this long before he kind of has now become a bit more of a polarizing figure. But it's really the idea of thinking from analogy and metaphor versus thinking from first principles. It's like both are needed, right? As analogy and metaphor help us kind of move more quickly in our thinking and really bridge complex ideas together more simply. And really without that kind of level of thinking, we wouldn't be able to get through the day. But without being discerning about these ideas, over time, they can narrow our thinking and bring in unintended consequences. So, for example, as Carol was talking about in this first paragraph, the articles are proposing the necessity of missions. And they're citing another author who uses missions in the context of the military, right? And so logically, it's an apt metaphor, right? It's like what gets opened up, though, is that you apply a military metaphor to your business one day, and then the next and soon, without realizing it, you end up with this command and control hierarchy because you start to kind of just like slowly and quietly adopt all of the structures and thinking associated with that. And as we all know, command and control hierarchies are designed to discourage critical thinking for the bottom on the top, right?
Exactly. And the whole idea of mission in its original form, its etymology, as they say, is command and control. Now, it's always used in the intention of we're going to go do good. And a mission is sending us out to act on something. It's dispatching is what the word meant. Like it was originally used in the 15th century. I think it became related particularly to religion. And people were sent out or commissioned or war to take back something. So it always had a particular end in mind. And so if we're going to use the metaphor mission, because our brain gets kind of entrained to how it's been used, and it's often used in a colonizing sense, and we don't see that colonizing in the sense that our view you should adopt. So when we have a mission to the moon, we have our own mission to plant a flag, and we can say we're doing it for all mankind, but we are racing someone else to do it. So it becomes a competitive idea, and we have the best idea. The people say, may the best man win or best team win. And so it's about colonizing, saving something, either people who we have a mission to go rescue someone or rescue their soul or some economic extraction where we go to get ours out of it. And so it really conveys the whole idea of one body takes something from another body. It also is a very anthropocentric idea. And, you know, that's what got us in trouble with the Earth being the center of the universe and the sun revolving around us, where we see everything from where we stand, and missions often are from that place also. There's a couple of other things that I think are important, but we'll get back to those. But that's kind of how I thought about it when you said, I'm worried about this metaphor. I don't think it's going to give us what we want. So what do you think was their point? Were they after any of these colonizing, saving the world? What were they after in the advice they were giving?
Yeah, I mean, so the article's a bit of a mishmash of kind of misused language that it really ends up kind of conflating the idea of missions with principles and rules and goals and process. And they kind of keep swapping those words around kind of over and over again. But at its core, I think it's attempting to say that mission statements are critical to employee engagement. And really when used to kind of like guide thinking, should end up superseding all kinds of work design structures and should kind of underpin all that stuff. So the authors are really imploring the reader to kind of quote unquote trust the process. And I think by that they mean trust the mission over the vision, as the vision, they say, will get people excited for their days, but the mission will ground them in their day-to-day work when kind of unexpected situations arise. But Carol, how does this relate to kind of the two previous concerns that you had?
Well, one of my major concerns is that it's not personally connecting people to anything. It's someone else's idea of external coming in to motivate people by using missions and visions and purpose. And the assumption is, and from everything I can read here, is that it's being offered some from powerful others. It's, and even if you go to off to write your own and bring them together, it's still mostly from higher up in an organization. So it's the benevolent command and control, so we can keep you excited. But the motivation is primarily external toward the people who are not creating the mission. In other words, it's a behavioral method where we use the power and influence and personality and charisma of people to try and get people excited, rather than the personal choice, where which we talk a lot about, that you find a way to connect people from their own intrinsic motivation to a motive that they help choose, like something either for a stakeholder, particularly a customer. Now, that has staying power if they are also doing the work to help that be achieved. So tell me more about, I mean, we're kind of wandering around here to see if we can get to it, but I think this still has something to do with language and metaphor in the way they're using it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think in my experience, I saw this happen a lot in healthcare, where leaders would go to these kind of all day events and they would create vision and mission statements for their teams. And without fail, these statements were stapled onto a wall somewhere, or, you know, handed out, and people put them on sticky notes on their computer, and they were forgotten like literally within days. And even in the instance where they were kind of created, where staff came together with leaders and they did them together, the half-life of those things was like 1 to 2 weeks, really. And so while the authors note that kind of, quote, many successful companies know what they are trying to accomplish and are moving in a clear direction, never in business have I seen this accomplished effectively with a mission statement, especially when they're determined by leaders and handed down to staff. And the authors even go so far as to admit that academic studies and the effect of mission statements have provided kind of weak or ambiguous results. We would say that this is probably due to self-reported survey data, which we've discussed the flaws of, and that ultimately, in our experience, externally determined mission statements ultimately have little to no effect due really to lack of use. And there's no development underpinning any of that. So what we're talking about here is all externally determined ideas, right? But Carol, what's the premise that you want to work from that really has to do with intrinsic motivation here?
Well, all of the ideas out of behavioralism believe people are kind of born fixed. And if you start with that premise, then you're doing everything you can from the outside, either to move the people you've got or replace them. I have a very different premise than was said of them. And the first one is that, and I think this motivates all of us, is we are born as humans incomplete. And we physically, we have to grow to be able to walk and do all sorts of things to be an adult. But it's also true with our thinking capacity. We can, and this is not a part of how business works, they train people, which is not the same thing as developing them, which is to bring forward more of who they are and what they can be. And this can happen open-endedly. So the real work, and the premise has to be, the real work is to develop people in terms of what is innate in them, but undeveloped in terms of ableness. And this is not only possible, but it's the most effective, by far, way to make up motivation. I mean, if you put them on a scale, missions, vision, purposes, they all have very low staying power, where when you wake up me growing and developing and being able to contribute, now I'm really awake. And you can bring together motives and motivation, which are now treated as separate things. Somebody else figures out the motivation, and then they hope that works for you, but you weren't a part of it. So I think we have innate motivation, and that's what we ought to be developing, the capacity to exercise it, for people to exercise, and help businesses. Of course, that's what we do, is teach them how to make that kind of thing, which is self-renewing, self-generating. I mean, you've got a company that's growing like crazy right now. What's been your experience in, overall your career going from consultant of various kinds, and in your own life and maybe even with your children, but certainly the employees you work with?
Yeah, so I think, we're in the process of taking on a pretty large film gig. And along the way, one of our crew actually forgot to make a critical delivery of some data, some motion capture data. And so it was really jarring for all of us, kind of including him, snapped us all awake. So it was hard, but instead of kind of punishing, demoting, or berating him, which I really knew would get us nowhere, I decided to introduce a framework for reconsidering prioritizing work for all of us. And we've talked about it before on the podcast, called Levels of Work. And through one of our development sessions, he and we were able to all formulate new strategies for ourselves to help us prioritize how we approach this monster of a project. And since then, we've all had a much clearer sense of how to work towards the overall goals of the project. And then kind of each day being able to track and reprioritize the moment to moment kind of what's happening as well. And so I noticed myself and others, we all seem to have these kind of deeper levels of motivation that we're sourcing from as we work and are taking on bigger and bigger aspects of this production. And so the fact that we're coming together stronger through all this also is kind of feeding that motivation, right? So that's inherently also kind of intrinsic to us as well.
So I have a follow-up question to that, which is, could you see the difference in kind of motivation that comes from a person being developed, because all of you were developing yourselves in that process, rather than figuring out what went wrong, the problem, who's at fault, how do we get it fixed? What was the difference you saw in how people responded to the development process you just described?
Well, it's like the scapegoating process is very isolating. It's like you put this person over there and you burn them at the stake and then you hope the problem goes away. It's very sacrificial. But that doesn't really change anything, right? It doesn't transform anything. Nothing's ultimately moved from one place to another. You've just kind of hoped that you've sacrificed enough and that hopefully the bad things won't keep coming. But that doesn't really change anything fundamentally for anybody. It's a short-term fix. And so I think what's up underneath that is really a desire to kind of grow people. And each person on our team has that fundamentally. They all want to continue to grow and do better and contribute more meaningfully, right, to the project and to people's lives. And so that shift I can feel very palpably. And I see it. I mean, I see it with this person who made the boo-boo, and I see it with everyone else kind of like coming out of that. Everyone has really dug in and is really stepping up to, I got this, no, I got this. And it's way more powerful and palpable. And it feels relieving, I think, for all of us that we all kind of have a clear sense of direction.
That's great. So one of the things we know is if we grow people, you're going to get a lot more than writing a mission or having a mission dictated. I think there's a second thing that's much more powerful in motivation is staying power, which this article, I think, was trying to hint at. The difference is they didn't give us good solutions. But the second missing ingredient was the understanding of how things are nested. So they were mostly talking about teams doing specific work. Those teams are always nested in some, in our view, not a functional group, although that may be how they're structured, but you want their individual or their teamwork to be nested in a buyer node. And by the way, there will be on the website in our show notes, a visual of which I'm speaking to, but it's based on concentric rings. I've got five concentric rings, and the smallest ring in the nest is an individual's work. And they have to have what we've just been talking about, which is this deep motivational connection. But it's got to be not to an internal company mission statement, but to some buyer node, some through probably a field team helping them figure it out, but directly to users and buyers and how you can impact and make a difference. And that's like a bigger ring. And the question is, what's their work? And not so much their mission, but their purpose and their direction. And all that has to be nested for a team and individual inside of an even greater whole, which is that which is about the company's essence and its work and the stakeholder commitments it has and what it sees as its contribution in the market. All of that, you have to not dumb things down to a mission as they're saying, well, people can't hang on to it. Well, that's a matter of capability. If you can develop people's ability to hang on to the whole of the organization, now they can nest their own work, their own activities, their contribution, their promises beyond ableness we talk about. All those are now nested with their larger connection and the buyer nodes and all the way down to individuals, not just teams being driven. I bet all this plays out in your company, even if you don't describe it exactly this way. But I know you don't develop missions and leave people separated from one another. So how do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't worked this particular framework yet, but we've had many conversations about the nested nature of our work. And it's funny that you're bringing this up. So about 2 years ago, a member of our team came to me and said, I think we need mission statements so I can know what I'm doing, right? And so we had a long conversation, not dissimilar from the conversation you and I are having here. And I introduced the idea at one of our sessions, actually, of working modes of behavior, which is reactive, ego, and purposeful, which we've also talked about on this podcast before. And this process helped all of us evaluate different projects and to notice where we found ourselves falling into these different modes and to be more choiceful in how we were trying to engage. And so coming out of that, we were able to develop aims for how each of us engage individually and together in these projects going forward. And these aims actually continue to come up as recently as like a week ago, as we support one another to realign ourselves and we get off track from our individual aims. And so you contrast that with missions, where I've never even seen them discussed after like 1 to 2 weeks from their creation, right? All of a sudden, we're talking about these aims 2 years later. So there's definitely something greater and more meaningful here to this process.
Yeah, I think this whole article was talking about what the research said and what's been effective, ineffective, what has staying power versus what barely hangs on. And to me, there's an overall, and we're both talking about it, an overall effectiveness question with missions generally. And one of the reasons is that it's very, very disconnected from real people's work. Even though they're saying, give me a mission so it affects the day-to-day, if it's abstract and generic, unless you have a process that brings people down to how they relate to it, which means all the intermediaries, which they suggest, like leaders being able to come together and get a mission and give it to people and then help them stay connected to it. It's just one more layer of hierarchy or people who do the thinking for you. And I think when you break the link between contributor and beneficiary, you have really the wrong method for getting motivation. It's rebuilding that link between I personally, a contributor, and we as a team do some specific beneficiary. Now we're talking about a powerful method for motivation. So for me, it's always a very different way of coming at it than I know this film project, you probably face this kind of thing also. How do you keep people connected? Tell us a little more of the story about how you're making this kind of getting the intermediaries out of the way.
Yeah, totally. So turns out I'm an intermediary. It's kind of what I found out in this project. And I noticed specifically that kind of the clients and the leaders on the client side kept trying to connect with me on various technical aspects related to capture. How does this thing work? How does that thing work? And so I had to make the conscious choice to step back and push forward the rest of my team. Because they're all used to a different way of working where they're, you know, there's all these different levels and all this other kind of stuff. And that ultimately what I realized is that was really detrimental. Because I'm not even going to be there for most of the actual shooting schedule. And so really these guys, these folks are the ones that needed to step up. And so since I've stepped back, the rest of my team has been able to step up in a big way where also due to the development that we're doing, they're reaching out to clients on their own to really steward the different aspects of this project. And so we're all kind of in it together, which has been really relieving and motivating for all of us rather than kind of everyone piling everything on me as kind of a choke point for what's going on.
Yeah, I think this whole idea of behavioral with these third parties who are attempting to help and motivate people, you know, it's about 100 years old in this country now. And my seventh book is about it and why we have to get rid of intermediaries. Even though they're as smart and caring as you are, you're only making matters worse. And particularly one of the things that happens, we put any intermediary or anyone who's deciding for others what they should do, is we come up against a couple of things. One is the genericism, which we've talked about earlier, but fragmentation. I mean, David Bohm wrote a great book called Wholeness and the Implicate Order, and he said the major reason we can't solve any of the major challenges we have in this century, and for him that was the last century, is because we fragment. We don't work with wholes. We look at a tree and we see leaves and trunk and roots, and we define a tree or not as its role in working in a forest or a forest as a part of a life shed, but we see all of it as fragments, and we define the things that aren't perfect in an isolated way as a problem. And all the mission statements they give examples of, and by the way, all I've ever seen written, even people who start out with us in the business development communities we run, all work with isolating like a team here. They've isolated teams and saying, give teams a mission down at the ground where they can work. But that assumes you have supervisors and management who go figure that out, and they start with whatever the shiny thing is that gets your attention right then, whatever is the problem. And then they have to steer all the work that people are doing because they're working on a fragment of something. They are not working on understanding how to work from wholes. And this is one of the things a mission statement always misses, because if you think about a mission to the moon and you don't know why you're doing that, you know, at least John F. Kennedy tried to remind us it was to instill a desire of young people in school to become mathematicians and science, to create a nation that had a great intelligence about what it meant, and to do that for all countries, all nations on the planet. That's not a fragmented idea where we get to the moon and we have, and by the way, the people that were interviewed who were involved in the moon project said that sense was not a vision. It was so easy for them to connect to because they had children who were studying things that they couldn't figure out why. And the minute we had the mission to the moon, we had something that had an end to it, an achievement to it, but it also had a bigger meaning. So I think there is a way to think about mission, but it's usually fragmented and not connected to this greater whole. So, you know, back to you. Forgive us some final way to think about mission statements and what use are they, or how do they connect or don't they?
Yeah, I mean, to what you're saying, Carol, like mission statements cannot substitute seeing holistically, like seeing this project example that we're working on holistically.
Yeah.
In our case, we need the entirety of the team to be able to conceive of a capture process from idea to final delivery. And I can tell you this doesn't happen in a meeting or in one session or a half day thing. It's a process of continually regenerating and imaging the flow of work over and over and over again with kind of higher levels of fidelity and seeing it kind of alive and moving. And so we have a large crew that's nested inside an even larger production, nested inside a number of locations, nested inside an industry, all of which are in a constant state of change. And the problem with missions is that they can change moment to moment based on what's happening on the ground. But to be able to reconceive of the holes that are moving to determine a clear direction forward, that's an invaluable capability that serves long past this project. So, Carol, what are your final thoughts here?
Well, I'm thinking about Einstein again, who told us to be cautious about using the method that got us into the trouble we're in to try and get us out. And people often wonder what that means, but it has a lot to do with this idea of how we tend to fragment everything and then look for a generic answer. So we have a problem with people being motivated and staying on course. So we say that's the problem. Ah, let's get a solution that keeps them all together called a mission. But the minute we work on the mission, if it's not developing the mind like you're talking about doing with all the people who are there, nothing we give them works. It's really about developing the capacity of the mind to see a living system at work. And once we can see all that, we can create the kind of outcomes we need and create the attention we need with each individual, each team, the organization as a whole, and staying connected to our stakeholders, not with fragments, not with generic answers, but with premise and principles which keep us connected to the whole. We have two upcoming summits, one on life work partnering, August 12th. It's on a Friday from 9 a.m. Pacific time until noon. And that one is about life partners and work partners and learning how to build charters and processes for building a powerful relationship that helps all the partners succeed. The second summit we have is for business teams, three or more, we annually produce both of these summits. The one for business teams this year is November 15th. And is on more of an all-day summit till 3 in the afternoon. The next one we're doing is on what is the real social responsibility arena that businesses need to pay attention to. And we're going to talk quite a bit about how, unless we can keep democracy working and the role of how people learn and change, which right now I believe is causing a decline in intelligence, which undermines democracy. We can't do the work we need to do on climate change, inequality, pandemics, all the things we're dealing with, I believe, need to be dealt with at the level of democracy, which really means building mental thinking skills and the ability to develop personal capacity to manage our state.
Also, we have a community for parents and couples, family pods organized around the same children, and community pods of multiple family pods on applying the regenerative principles to familying and bringing communities of families together. You can find out more at seed-communities.com/parenting.
And book number six, I have Indirect Work, which is really the key to all my other books so far, is off and on special on Kindle for 99 cents on Amazon. It turned out to be a number one Amazon bestseller for six straight weeks and then stayed for another month on the bestseller list, even though it wasn't number one. If you check out carolsanford.com under the books tab, you'll see there are so many discounts and bonuses, including be able to form a book club with a workbook, which would be very helpful.
And thanks as always, well, specifically this week, thanks to Karin for today's question and article. And thank you to everyone else who's ever sent an article to us. Please remember to send us your business journal articles to get our business second opinion. but don't send subject unless it's in the article you send. This has been Business Second Opinion. Thank you.